If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done. If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This is the Hidden Killers podcast with Tony Bruschi and continuing coverage of the case against Karen Reed.
So what was life like with John O'Keefe and Karen Reed and the kids? We've heard various accounts from Karen over the years and the documentaries and the places where she has spoken. Today was an interesting day in court because the kids, at least the oldest, the 14-year-old girl, his niece, but he was had adopted or taken care of as a daughter, got a chance to speak in court today, and she told a bit of a different story.
Yeah.
But before we get to that, let's take a look and refresh ourselves with how Karen has been expressing this relationship, or how she expressed it in the investigation discovery doc. Let's take a look.
The relationship felt less healthy as time went on, mainly because of the dynamic among the four of us, that I was getting closer to the kids. I was spending more time there. I had more of a role, and it seemed to bother John.
So
she, a little jealousy, maybe?
So she's saying she's getting closer to the kids, and she was getting more involved, and it bothered John. So she's saying getting closer to the kids and it bothered John. Okay, let's see what the kids had to say today about all this, because things weren't just rocky between Karen Reed and John O'Keefe at the end. They were loud, uncomfortable, and according to the very kids living in that house, impossible to ignore. Testifying in court, John's teenage niece, who he had taken in and raised alongside her younger brother after they lost both their parents, told jurors she watched the whole relationship fall apart in real time. Started off pretty good and lighthearted, sure. But by late 2021, the cracks were getting hard to ignore. They were fighting a lot, she said. You could tell he was frustrated. This wasn't secondhand gossip. This was a kid living in the house. And by January of 2022, there was a lot more, like tension and fighting. Denise, just 14, when Uncle JJ died, didn't mince words. Their relationship with Karen, hit or miss, quote, it kind of depended on the day, she said. Some days they get food or shop together, but other times Karen would appear cold and clearly favor the younger brother. Translation, you never knew which version of Karen you were getting, the friendly one or the one who made you feel like you weren't welcome in your own house. The testimony dug into a screaming match on their Aruba trip for New Year's. John walked in to check in on the kids, told his nephew to put his iPad away, and Karen flipped. According to the niece, Karen started yelling about how John had kissed someone else. The whole thing escalated so fast that the teen remembered it was very loud. Karen was very upset. You know, Karen Haley had no regards for the kids in these situations as well. These are, if that, to say that happened, let's say it's in theory it did, even though it didn't. You wouldn't flip out in front of the kids.
Oh, you'd hope not.
Well, you'd hope not. Like, you go to the side and you're going to talk about this. You don't start yelling these absolutes in front of his kids.
Young teens.
That are very impressionable, that he's doing something very wrong when you know it's not even true. Part of the pattern. Didn't stop there. Back in Massachusetts, the niece overheard another fight. This time, John told Karen, it was good, but it had run its course. This is interesting. So John is saying to Karen about the relationship, it's good, but it's run its course. Her response, not to leave, not to cool off. Instead, she started yelling, refused to go, and followed him upstairs. When he wouldn't let her into the bedroom, she began banging on the door. So, with that, Karen saying, okay, or John saying to Karen, yeah, it's good, but it's run its course. Does that in any way sound to you like, we're going to stay together forever, baby?
Nope.
Here's what Karen, and this is kind of hard to hear, so I'll reiterate what's said in it, but this is a clip that was played in court today. It's with Dennis Murphy on Dateline and his conversation with Karen Reed as she's describing what the relationship was like and, most importantly, John's commitment to her. Take a listen.
Was that going on?
That was not going on. John made it clear to me, I'm never breaking up with you.
I'm never breaking up with you.
You know, not never that we're in this good or bad, but you're the best person I've ever...
I'm never breaking up with you. You're the best person that I've ever... And then it cut there on the Dateline interview. I know the audio sucked, but that's what they played in court today, and that's how it was captured. But that's a little bit of a difference of I'm never breaking up with you where it's run its course. It's just, again, Karen says something, and if you look at the opposite end of the scale, it's usually closer to the opposite from everyone else's account.
Yeah.
Except for Karen.
It is. And what concerns me is, you know, these are, like you said, they're young, impressionable kids. It's one thing if these are young adults in their 20s and they've been through breakups and things like that. They have an idea of, well, yeah, relationships are hard. But these are not appropriate conversations to have in front of children. This is, you hear about shit like this in divorce cases where the parents are fighting in front of the kids and the kids end up in therapy because, oh my God, this is so traumatic. No kid should be seeing this. Mm-hmm. These kids have suffered enough. They lost their parents. Why are you fighting in front of them? And I'm faulting John a little bit here too. And I'm sorry, I don't mean to speak ill of the dead, but if things were this volatile between the two of them, they needed to do a better job of shielding these kids.
Yeah.
Especially seeing the trauma that they've already been through.
Sure.
If this relationship was so volatile and so explosive, maybe it should have been cut off sooner. Or you know what, Karen? You and I don't get along very well right now. I think you need to stop coming over until we get this figured out.
Yeah.
I need to shield these kids from this kind of drama.
Easier said than done, though.
Yes, true. You know, very easy to sit here and say this now.
Yeah, a lot easier said than done because you find yourself in those situations. I find myself in those situations where it's such a slow, toxic build. And once it like gets to that boiling point where it's like, it was good, but it's run its course, or like this is turning into a nightmare. You're the lobster in the pot.
Yeah.
Or the frog in the boiling water too. It's like, oh my God. Yeah.
Yeah, and I get that. And I don't mean to sound so insensitive. It's really easy to sit here and say that.
Sure.
But it's, you know, it's another, if this is what you've been used to, and then all of a sudden you're like, one day you wake up and go, mm-hmm. this is not working. This is not a good situation.
Yeah.
I need to do something different.
By the end of January, the fighting had become routine. They were arguing a couple times a week, she said. After one blowout, John left the house to take a breather. Karen claimed the kids were worried about him, but the niece cleared that up too. I didn't know he left until I heard her on the phone. I wasn't worried. That little contradiction. Then came January 29th, the night before. Niece stayed home with, John went out with friends. She went to bed after midnight, and a few hours later, she was woken up by Karen, frantic, shaking her awake, saying John hadn't come home. Quote, she appeared more frantic than I'd ever seen her, the niece said. Karen then told her to call John. No answer. Karen had her call Jen McCabe and then took the phone. During that early morning flurry of calls, the niece heard Karen ask, could I have done something? Could he have gotten hit by a plow? And finally, maybe I hit him. Yeah.
See, there it is again. Again.
Yeah.
She's told a lot of people this.
Yes, because she said it. She, mm-hmm. Even by her own damn admission, she said it, which to me, I'm like, okay, why are people debating this anymore? It's like,
why are we even in court? Why didn't she just say, oh my God, I fucking accidentally hit my boyfriend. I didn't mean to. This was an accident.
She's on tape saying, I know I said I hit him, but did I really say it that many times?
Sounds like it.
Well, yes, Karen. And you just admitted you said it. Okay. And it really, it's not a whole lot of difference between did I, could I hit him? Maybe I could have hit him. In that moment, they all pretty much mean the same thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's a stunning revelation about something that is extremely serious. It's not just amusing. It's not like, huh, I wonder if I, you know, did I unplug the curling iron?
Yeah.
Huh. No, it's nothing like that. It's something horrifically traumatic that she's revealing to to anyone who will listen, basically. Isn't it?
Yeah, pretty much.
I mean, to the paramedics, to the niece, to Jen McCabe, who she didn't know, right? I mean,
I mean, it's all just... I don't know. It's just ludicrous at this point. I mean, she knew exactly where the body was. She knew exactly where to go. She said multiple times that she saw him in the yard. She saw him where she left him in that general vicinity. She was expecting to find him in the general vicinity of where she last left him. And then it only got more convenient to say that he went into the house because that other story only points one way and it's not a good one.
Yep.
Meanwhile, all these people are in the house. They never saw anybody come in that door. And that door's right there. You'd have to go and you would be seen.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, yeah. It just, none of it adds up. She had knowledge that the first thing she says, hit by a plow. So that tells me the last place she saw him was probably in the road, not to where he fell down, because he didn't look mortally wounded. She's looking back. She sees him stumbling around, thinks he'll, you know, walk it off, whatever. And she's angry and she's leaving. Leaves, keeps calling, starts to really wonder. Call, 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 voicemail. I hate you, John. Call, 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 call. You're sleeping with another woman. I mean, it's just, and it's all self-soothing to herself because she can't admit in her mind that, gee, maybe she hit her boyfriend and he was stumbling around and is dead. In the snow. No, it's much easier to go and say, he's screwing another girl.
I fucking hate you, John. You're a pervert.
And by the end of it, it was very, the verbiage in there was so self-soothing in nature, the way that the tone was. You're effing another girl. That's what's happening. It wasn't, you're effing another girl. It was, I got to tell myself the story. And it's obvious. It's obvious. And I know that a lot of people out there just don't get it because thank God they haven't been in situations like this. Because Sometimes you only get this is when you've been through it. Then you see things through a whole different dynamic and a whole different light of how people function. So I get, you know, I would probably be thinking very, very differently had I not had my own life experiences. But that's how we all see things differently and that's how we filter things. And that's just why we can see things extremely different sometimes. So back to the kids and their memory and what they said in court or what she said in court. Karen left soon after, came back with McCabe. And this is the morning, when Karen is freaking out and talking to them on the phone. They go off and try to find John. They came back to the house with McCabe and Carrie Roberts. McCabe came in to check on the niece, described as level-headed, Karen? Still frantic. But never once coming in to comfort the kid she just dragged out of bed during what she called the worst moment of her life. Not even a look in her direction.
That's a very painful admission that where is your empathy? You can't find the right. You can't find the only steady person left in these kids' lives. He's missing right now. Did I misunderstand? Was he injured at this point and she knew it, or was he still missing?
No one knew where he was.
Okay, we didn't know.
Karen's the only one shouting, did I hit him? Could I have hit him? Maybe he got hit by a snowplow. Karen's saying all of this, but we don't know that he's in the snow. The more likely thing would be he's on somebody's couch. He's screwing another girl, as Karen wants to freak out about and claim, if you're waking up and your boyfriend's not back, those would be probably the two things you'd be guessing, not he's dead in the cold.
Yeah. And I guess there's a part of me that says, well, you probably don't, if you believe that your boyfriend is doing another woman, you probably don't want to share that part with the niece and nephew. So I can give her a little grace that she didn't comfort the kids, but
she shared all that with the niece and nephew too, because she's on the phone in bed with them.
Yeah.
That's what she claims. So again, is it true? I'm going off of Karen's words on this one. And she's screaming, you're screwing another girl. You're an effing pervert. And claiming the kid's right there. Now, if they are, I don't know. But that was according to Karen herself.
Which, can we believe her? She's contradicted herself so many times.
I mean, the reality is probably none of the stories that she's told. It's something, I don't want to say more nefarious, but just something that's not exactly what reality is.
Yeah.
Or what her presentation of reality is. Why? Probably really not much of a reason at all. It's just, they had to lie. She has to lie. She can't be the one that's being looked at as a horrible human being. And if you don't have empathy over here, all you're caring about is your image. How are people going to see me? Because that's the biggest number one for so many people that are seemingly kind of like Karen Reid.
There's a lot.
Not a doctor, can't diagnose anybody, but you know, you can look at this and go, these characteristics look familiar.
We've all met Karen Reid.
Yeah.
We've either worked with her or dated her.
She certainly has not done anything for the world of Karens out there. They already had a tough time with the name Karen. And now, wow, you got the spokesperson. Later that day, Karen returned briefly with her father and brother, told the family she felt like she was living in a nightmare, then left again. On cross, defense attorney David Unetti tried to make Karen look like a stand-in mom. Salon visits, school projects, sporting events, but the niece wasn't buying it. When asked about the Aruba trip, she shrugged it off. I'd just gotten dumped by my eighth-grade boyfriend, so I was in a crisis. The courtroom laughed, but the truth was already out. No, she never saw Karen physically harm her uncle, but she didn't have to. They just seemed less happy to be around each other. The signs were there. The kids were in the house, and they saw it all. Yeah. So, there's that. It doesn't exactly sound the way Karen described it on the interview.
No.
Now, if you're going to go down the conspiracy route, it's all, well, they've been brainwashed by their family and coached to say this and coached to say that and la da 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 da. How about, like, their account just seems to line up with most everyone except for Karen Reid?
Yeah. It's a like, person who could go to prison for a long period of time for what she did.
And she didn't really say anything outlandish either. I mean, it contradicted Karen, because Karen opened her mouth and had to be looked at as a wonderful person and said that the relationship is good and I'm getting closer to the kids. But me and John are having troubles and all that, or however she worded it. No, she had to, you don't want to be looked at as a bad person to kids. So it was worded that specific way. And that's where the contradiction herein lies. I don't think anything of what the kid said is like really in question. It's all pretty much already been said.
Mm-hmm.
It just shows another contradiction of Karen. That should be the title of the book, The Contradictions of Karen.
There are many. How many editions would there be?
I think you get quite a few in that. There's another clip from court today. I want to pull this up. This is another piece of when they basically got back into the courtroom after the kids had testified. We're seeing more clips, and this is the one that came right after the Dateline one. You can hear this one a little bit better.
Commonwealth would ask to show clip 19.
I don't see how John could have known about my text with Brian. And I'm not sure if he knew he would have reacted very strongly. I think we would have broken up, but I don't think John would have lost it and lost his way. I didn't feel that John's emotions with me got really strong.
So her basically saying that she doesn't think John would basically have physically reacted or attacked anybody if he would have found out about the text thing with Higgins.
Seriously?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Now, the opposite side of this is saying, well, it's not about how John would react. It's about how Higgins would react. And Higgins would be the one that would have instigated it. That's how the FKR folks are talking about this. Higgins Higgins seems like the guy that would do that. I mean, the guy is like, he has quite a impressive track record in his career of what he's done. I don't think he'd be putting it all on the line for Karen Reed, whom he already is saying, hey, I don't want to get in the way. You're my friend's girlfriend. It wasn't exactly like, let me come rescue you, my dear damsel in distress.
Yeah.
That they're trying to frame that up to be.
God.
And Karen there saying, you know, well, at least one half of the fight wouldn't be from John. So if that's the case, then we have to believe that John got into the house and Higgins is just sitting there waiting to go after John. Even though they were all just hanging out earlier together, there's nothing that looks remotely amiss, but suddenly he's just, you know, standing there in the wait. I'm going to take him out tonight. A fellow cop.
I was just going to say a fellow cop.
Fellow cop. Yeah. Find me that world. There's just so much.
It feels really surreal. It just, it's really upside down, you know?
It is. I mean, there's just so much. On Twitter or X, I'm putting out the new segment every single day, the Karen Reed Can't Possibly Be Guilty clip of the day. And it's just little clips, and you watch it, and then and this has been the Karen Reed Can't Possibly Be Guilty clip of the day. Because people seem to be interpreting these clips in very different ways. I don't know how, especially when it's like just her literal own words.
Mm-hmm.
But hey, you hear what you want to hear. Let's take a look at some of the evidence that came into court today as well. Let's pull up that. Actually, this is the one I want to go to. So this is afternoon testimony.
Photograph that's been marked as an exhibit. Do you recognize what's in that exhibit?
Yes, I do.
And what is it?
Those are 6 red plastic cups that contained frozen red brown stains.
Did you do anything relative to the content of those cups?
I took a collection from one of the cups using 2 sterile cotton swabs.
Can you just briefly explain what that process entails?
Yes. I allowed the frozen red brown stains to thaw. I applied sterile water to two cotton swabs, and then I applied it to one of the red brown stained cups to collect the material from inside.
How do you preserve and maintain the integrity of whatever sample you collect?
That sample is then entered into a glassine envelope, a larger manila envelope. It is then sealed with my initials and date. It is given an independent item number and stored within the proper unit within the lab.
You can take that down. Thank you. At some point, did you look at clothing?
Yes, I did.
Where did you look at clothing?
I examined the clothing from this case at the Massachusetts State Police Crime Laboratory.
Was the items brought to the crime laboratory?
Yes, they were.
Did you have a chance to unpackage them?
Yes, I did.
When you received them, how were they stored?
They were stored in brown paper bags and potentially boxes. I don't remember off the top of my head.
And did you look at a number of different items of clothing?
Yes, I did.
May I approach, Your Honor?
Yes.
I'm going to show you a series of four photographs. I'm going to ask you about each one of them individually. You recognize the first photograph?
Yes, I do.
What is it?
This is a photograph I took of a gray sweatshirt.
Does that photograph accurately depict the sweatshirt as it appeared to you when you looked at it?
Yes, it does.
You look at the second photograph, please. You recognize what's in that photograph?
Yes, I do.
What is it?
This is an additional photograph of the front of the gray sweatshirt where I had put some markings on the sweatshirt.
Why did you put markings on the sweatshirt?
These markings specifically are noting areas of damage.
Third photograph, please. You recognize what's in that photograph?
Yes, I do.
And what's in that photograph?
This is a close-up photo of the area of damage that I denoted as one.
And a fourth photograph, please. You recognize that photograph?
Yes, I do.
What is it?
This is a close-up of area damage one.
Is that a fair and accurate depiction of what you saw that day when you examined this particular item?
Yes.
I move these four photographs into evidence.
Let me just see them quickly. Thank you, Mr. President.
No objection, Your Honor.
So let's mark them one exhibit, ABCD, please. Is it 147 A, B, C, and D?
Thank you. With the court's permission, could we please show former P190 to the jury?
Yes.
Is that one of the photographs you just recognized?
Yes, it is.
And could you explain to us what you see?
This is the exterior front of the gray sweatshirt. There is linear damage between the top and bottom of the sweatshirt, as well as linear damage across each sleeve of the sweatshirt.
Do you see the cut down the front of that sweatshirt?
Yes.
Did you distinguish that cut as any different than the damage on the arm?
I did not do any damage analysis on that particular area of damage.
Why not?
Typically, in these type of events, you'll see those types of damage associated with clothing being removed from emergency medical technicians, so they're not forensically relevant.
Thank you. If we could turn now to former P194. Is this the same sweatshirt?
Yes, it is.
And there's a little bit difference. Is markings or tabs on it?
Yes, that's correct.
What are you doing there?
I put tabs on each of the areas of damage on the sleeve and two on the chest that I was going to examine further.
When you put the tabs on, do you write a report or mark it in any way to memorialize it in case the tabs fall off?
Yes, in this case, they were marked tabs 1 through 9. Those are not permanent on the sweatshirt. They're actually just pieces of filter paper that I used to mark it.
Could we, Ms. Gilman, zoom in on that right arm, please? Thank you, sir. Thank you very much. What is written on those tabs?
Each tab has a number on it that corresponds with an area of damage that I examined.
And when you write a report, when you memorialize it, is that to keep an accounting of each?
Yes, that's correct.
If we could turn now to former P-196, which is 147C. What does that depict, ma'am?
That is a close-up of the area of damage one that I did further examination on.
Could we zoom in a little bit on the, yes, the circle part? Is that a fair and accurate depiction of what it looked like when you examined it?
Yes, it is.
And finally, if we could have P197, which is exhibit 147D. What are you doing there?
That's a close-up photo of that same area of damage one with a scale included.
We just saw a close-up of one of the holes that was marked number one. Did you do the same analysis for each and every one of those areas that you marked?
Yes, I did.
And did you look close up at each and every one of them and measure each and every one of them?
Yes, I did.
Are there photographs showing all of those different angles for each and every hole that you went through?
Yes, I took numerous photographs of each area of damage.
You could take that down, please. In addition to that sweatshirt, did you look at any other clothing items?
Yes, I did.
Court's permission, can I approach?
Yes.
Thank you. I'm showing you two photographs. If you look at the first one, do you recognize what's in that photograph?
Yes, I do.
What is it?
This is item 7-17. It's an orange T-shirt.
Is it a fair name? Should I wear it?
Thanks.
Thank you. Is that a fair and accurate depiction of the T-shirt when you examined it?
Yes, it is.
And the second photograph, please, could you take a look?
Yes.
Do you recognize what's in that?
Yes, I do.
What is it?
This is the other side of the orange T-shirt.
Is that a fair and accurate depiction of the T-shirt when you examined it?
Yes, it is.
All right, will these two photographs into evidence, please?
No objection, Your Honor.
So this 148A and B.
With the court's permission, I'd like to show P232 to the jury.
Okay.
Could you tell us what you see?
That is a photograph of item 7-17, is the back of the orange T-shirt.
Could we zoom a little in on the numbers on the bottom, Ms. Gilman? What's that on the bottom?
That is the case number, the individual item number for that T-shirt, my initials, and the date that I examined it, or the date that I took the photo.
So you had obtained this item on that date, or this is when you examined it and already had it?
That is the date that I opened it up, examined it, and took the photo.
And on the left, what's that ruler used for?
That's a scale just to show the size of the item.
Could we zoom back out and get a full look at that? Thank you. If you could turn next to P233, Ms. Gilman.
I want to jump ahead to some of the taillight stuff.
Excuse me.
And what were the circumstances under which you were reviewing a video?
I had just recently found out there was video, and it's just something I wanted to see in case I was shown it on the stand so I knew what it consisted of. I hadn't seen it prior to last Thursday.
Did you testify to that on your direct and I missed it, or did it not come up? Viewing a video.
I'm sorry, yes. I believe I was asked if I had seen the video, and yes, I had.
Okay, thank you. Now, back to the taillight. Mr. Woke, if we could have Exhibit 145 published.
Okay.
With Your Honor's permission.
Yes.
Thank you. We have up on the screens, and I know you went through this on direct, so I'm going to shortcut it. This is the taillight at the lab that you were talking about on direct, correct?
Yes, that's correct.
And that's the taillight housing that you submitted to the lab that you had obtained from the Sallyport garage, right?
Yes, correct.
So just to cover quickly some basics, there was one swab taken that you mentioned on direct of that taillight.
Yes.
And you testified, if I remember correctly, on direct that you, well, it's better for you just, if you could with a pointer, is just show the areas you covered with that one swab.
So it's, I collected the swab from any of the, what would have been exposed areas of the taillight when the taillight was intact.
And if you could please just give like a perimeter full, I know it's not a circle, but whatever it is, just full perimeter so the jury can see the entire area that you swabbed.
Sure. It was this upper right-hand red area, this portion down here, I believe it's red. And then there's also a portion of clear area in the front here that was swabbed. And that was all contained on a single swab.
Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. So I want to keep this up if I could, Your Honor, but we can have the lights back on if that's acceptable. Just so thank you. In terms of the swabbing, you did not swab, therefore, any other area of that taillight, correct? Including the area to the left of where you just drew the circle, if you will, around, correct?
I would just say it's difficult from this picture to see if there's what would have been exposed when the tip. May I finish? I'm sorry. I don't know specifically on the left from this picture if there's anything that would have been there prior to the damage. If there was an external area, it would have been included in my collection. So I just didn't include any of the internal components of the taillight. So if I'm missing a piece over there that would have been on the exterior, then I apologize. I just can't see it in the picture if it's there.
Let's just assume my discussion and my questions. You don't have to assume this. My questions are just with regard to the inside of the taillight, because you've very nicely governed and talked about the outside of the taillight as you described it, where you swab. Now I want to go to the areas that you didn't swab.
Okay.
Whatever you best can do to describe the areas of the taillight that you did not swab.
Okay.
And if you could use the laser pointer, if that helps you.
So I did not swab the internal areas of the taillight. So here where the light bulb would have been, or down here where it's gray.
And focusing on the more, what will, is it okay to call it the inside part of the taillight? Is that acceptable?
Okay.
So the inside of the taillight, to be clear, you didn't swab that area.
No, I did not.
In terms of where you did swab, given that you swabbed with one swab the entire area, you are not able to say precisely where any DNA might have come from?
Just that it would have been present. If there was DNA present on that swab, it would have come from the external exposed area of the taillight, should the taillight have been intact.
But again, on the inside, because you didn't swab the inside, you had no evidence of DNA on the inside of the taillight, correct?
Correct. I did not swab the inside.
With regard to the, what we'll call the outside, where you did swab, as opposed to the inside where you didn't, you cannot define whether the DNA was to the upper right, to the outside of the taillight lens, or some other place in that area, correct?
No, I wouldn't be able to narrow down where on the external portion, external front. I mean, I didn't swab anything in the back that was attached to the vehicle. So anything in the external front, I would not be able to narrow down any further where, if any biological material was present, where it was recovered from, specifically on the external area.
You did not find
any glass
on the inside. Yeah.
Are you referring to like loose pieces? I did not note anything unusual inside the taillight.
I'm speaking, thank you for that answer. I am speaking specifically about glass. You didn't find any glass on the inside of that taillight when you were at Sallyport through your entire inspection on February 1st, 2020.
I'm just want to make sure that I understand your question. I didn't find anything that was not inherent to the taillight inside. I don't know what the taillight's made out of. So if there's a portion on the inside that's made out of glass, it may have been there. I didn't see anything that was out of place on the interior of the taillight. Okay.
So using your terms inherent, you mean by that something could have been on the inside of that taillight that was part of the taillight that could have been glass. But other than that, there's no what scientists call exogenous or outside glass or glass that doesn't belong as part of the taillight, correct?
I'm hesitant to answer that specific question. I don't perform glass analysis, so I just perform collection. So if there was something that apparently looked like glass that had been loose inside, if that's what you're referring to, I can answer that question. But I can't say specifically whether a material is glass.
I understand. My question is a basic one.
Okay.
Which is, you found no glass that would not be a... Let me strike that. Did you ever observe in this taillight any glass as part of the taillight that's part of the taillight? Anything glass did you observe?
Again, I can't make the distinction on a material being glass, so I think the premise of the question I'm having difficulty answering.
Okay. So... last part of the questioning, you didn't make any note that said you found glass inside of that taillight, correct?
I wouldn't make a note that something is glass inside a taillight because I can't draw a conclusion to what a material is because that's just not part of the analysis I do.
And to wrap this part up and then we can... move on from this item, you didn't find any DNA on the inside of that taillight.
My analysis would not include DNA analysis because that is a different unit, so I can't answer that question.
And I think we'll stop there.
Yeah.
That was fun.
Yeah, there's a lot here, man.
I don't do DNA analysis. Did you find DNA?
I find it, but I don't analyze it.
I don't even know if I found. I don't do it. Yes. Yeah. It's yeah.
What does that mean? I mean, how do you know something's DNA? I mean, you're analyzing it. You look at a hair and go, "There's DNA there."
No, he's asking her questions about areas that she's not analyzing. She's not an analyst for the areas that she's wanting, or he's trying to ask her that. But
no, she's just a collector.
Yeah. So he's asking her things that she can't answer. Not because she doesn't
want
to.
Well, at least she's consistent.
She just can't. It's just, you're asking, and then it makes her look like she's covering something up. It's like, no, she just can't answer those questions because she's not qualified to do so. So
it's not in her scope.
Yeah. Oh.
The defense just, maybe they need another day off, you know?
I don't know how factual it is, but I've seen from many sources now that it was in fact allergies yesterday, allegedly.
Now, wait a minute. Hold up.
There ain't no court that gets out for allergies.
Hold up. I feel like I ate a bagel full of pollen yesterday. So honestly, and this whole time, if anybody's watching the video, I'm just doing this. Like my eyes are itching so terribly and they're tearing and they're
just gross.
Yes,
and that's unfortunate if you're accused of murder, get to court.
Oh, God. Do you remember on radio when you were, if you were sick and you, we didn't really text back then, you would call your program director or your boss and go, you know, I've just been throwing up for like the last 3 hours. I've been up since three. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to be able to come in. And the response was, we've got a brand new waste basket for you. We need you in there. We'd rather have you vomiting on air and present than at home getting better. I don't know.
We didn't really have many options either at the same point. It wasn't like a shift where like, oh, well, we can get somebody else to come and make the subs at the Subway. Like you call around. I mean, whenever I would, if somebody was bad, I would go in and take the shift. I remember doing that a lot.
Well, that's what a good manager would do. You know what? You've got explosive diarrhea and you've just been vomiting for 3 hours. I'd rather have you stay home.
And it sucked because it was like, it wasn't ever you, but we had some people there that were just, you know, they would just call out for whatever reason.
Yeah.
And then it's like, oh, great. Now I get to go spend, and it wasn't like he's record a show. Now I get to go spend 5 hours at the radio station when my family is visiting, who I don't see forever. I mean, that happened once. And, or at one point, it was one of the club shows. And it was the certain person was supposed to do it.
I know her.
They should have been well on their way to the event. I was on vacation somewhere. I don't know where I was. I think I was in northern Wisconsin at the famous Dave's restaurant before it burned down. The one up by, was it Howard? Hayward? Hayward.
Hayward. Yeah, Hayward, yep. Hayward, Wisconsin.
And I got that call, and there's nothing I can do because I'm way the hell out of the area. And it was just, yeah, I don't really think I'm going to be able to make it tonight. It's like, should be like halfway there by now.
Yeah. You know, had you, let's just say you were going to be there, you would be an hour late.
Yeah.
Already.
I don't, yeah, I think, I mean, this was 24 years ago. I think Dave covered it, if I remember right.
Yeah, my radio partner.
Where it was like, because nobody else was around, I couldn't get there. I think I remember it was one where it was like, and it was just because funny because he never did the remotes for a club because it's super late at night. But but I remember that one week where it's like he did it. We didn't have any choice. It was like, yeah.
I get that. I totally get that. But there are some people who suffer from really bad allergies where their throat, like they're constantly coughing and they're crying because their eyes are just running. They're coughing. I've seen some really bad allergies during spring.
It was called off. Both parties agreed to say, sure, we'll take the day off. And the judge agreed. That's what it takes to get the day off. So everybody was in consensus that, okay, let's take the day off. But
but I'm sorry. Here's the thing. Remember,
takes a lot, though, allergies.
She already is immunocompromised.
Yeah,
she has MS.
I understand.
So things are worse. I'm not. You know, not on.
I don't know. I mean, I don't know. I just. It takes a lot to shut down court.
Yes, so, it does.
That's all I'm saying. I mean, I believe she had something going on. I don't know what, but even people within her own little group had been, this is from her own party of FKR people. There was flying around that they had seen her out, you know, having some beverages the night before. I can't confirm that by any means, but
oh, I hope that wasn't the case.
But when it's coming like directly from those people communicating with each other and it's in the, I don't know. I mean, again, pure speculation. Maybe on their part, but I don't know. There's people there on the ground that see these things. So I have no idea at what it was exactly, but they all agreed to call it a day and we had the day off. So
I was actually happy about it because I have some work to do with the trials when they happen. Yeah. And I needed to go do something last night. So I got to do it.
I was good. I was like, okay, let's have more allergy attacks, Karen, please just Why not? It does us all good every once in a while.
Nice break.
Craving nonstop true crime updates? Press subscribe now and get the latest cases, analysis, and expert commentary delivered straight to your feed. Only from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done. If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.